Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Meredith from Ivyland.
Hi, Meredith.
Hi, everyone. My name is Meredith, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you to Shay and the group for asking me to come out tonight. I'm not really a microphone kind of gal, but I'm going to try to just make it myself feel a little bit comfortable until I settle in, and, you know, I'm sure God's got everything like he always does. But my sobriety date is August 27th of 17. I have a home group, which is Clear Cut Directions in Ivyland. We meet Wednesday nights at 7. We're a big book breakdown group where we, you know, go line by line and read the literature and break it down. I have a sponsor. I speak to her daily. And I am blessed to sponsor other women in this program. I also am the treasurer of my group, and I'm a grateful alcoholic because a little over 4.5 years ago, my life changed for the better, and, you know, today I can get through anything by God's grace in this fellowship. So because it's a long hour speaker meeting, I guess I'll give you the long version of my story. So I come from Bucks County. I mean, I grew up in Holland, which is right next to Newtown, and I come from a very loving family. My parents were married for 53 years. I have a sister who's a little older than me, and we're close. So when I first came in to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have told you that the reason why I drank was because of my family. It was because this disease runs in my family on my mom's side. I would have told you I drank because it was that I was bullied as a young kid because I was overweight and I had learning disabilities. I thought that's exactly why I drank. And for years I had resentments over so many things, whether they were real or whether they were delusions, of why I needed to drink to numb the pain. But again, like, I came from a loving family, and, you know, I look back and, you know, my parents and my sister are always there for me. So I guess it was just my crazy alcoholic mind that made me think all these other reasons was why I wanted to drink. So, yeah, and, you know, I had learning disabilities, so I was always different. I was always told I was different early on in elementary school. And not only was I told I was different, I felt that I was different. I was always, as a young kid, I was always irritable, restless, and discontent, like always. Like, I always wanted more. Nothing was shiny enough for me. I always acted out. I don't think it was for attention, but I definitely liked the rise that I would get out of others. So, you know, I just did, like, alcoholic things as a young kid. I remember in nursery school, and this is a long hour, so you're going to get to hear the long version. Nursery school, I remember stealing a pound puppy from another little girl, and she was crying, and I remember thinking that if I went up to her while she was crying, remember, Michelle, blonde hair, that it would be more, it was so manipulative, it would be more realistic, it would look like I didn't steal it, it would look like I was trying to help her, and I remember saying, like, why are you crying? I'll help you find what you're missing, and meanwhile, it was in my duffel bag, and I think I was probably, like, 6. So, you know, just the behaviors, and I acted out and at a very young age, and it just continued. It continued on and on. And because that, when I was younger and I had these, like, disabilities, whatever you want to say, or I was, like, you know, one of the fat kids, everyone told me I didn't fit in. So when I got a little bit older and it was time to fit in, I chose not to. So by the time junior high school came around, I was fortunate enough to meet my best friend at the time, and his father was, like, a huge deadhead. And so from 8th grade on, from about 13 years old till about my early 20s, I went to go to Grateful Dead concerts, and my parents allowed me to. Because I did the reverse for years, the, what do they say? I'm just drawing a blank. Like, the I nevers. Like, I would do the reverse. I would tell my parents, like, you gotta let me go, you know? Like, I always come back. You know, and they were scared because back then it's like the runaways, like they would have them on the milk cartons and stuff, like missing children. And my parents would be like terrified that if they didn't say yes, because I was super manipulative, I would run away. Chances are I probably would. But I would say I never got arrested. I never got expelled. I never this, I never that. And so I used it like a spin doctor. Like I'd spun everything on them to make it so they would allow me. And then as high school came around, the consequences started. And, you know, then it was like, I still did it. I was not a good student. I didn't apply myself. I didn't have goals. You know, in high school, everybody's like, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to study this. I'm going to study that. And I got to tell you, my only goal was to see as many concerts as I could in the back of a VW bus or a school bus across the country. That's it. That's all I wanted to do. And I did that. And so in my mind, I'm living the life. I ended up graduating high school. And after I graduated high school, the consequences in my drinking, like my drinking started very young. My drinking started probably when I was 13 heavy. And it just kept getting heavier. And I thought as a kid that it was a badge of honor. I thought that, you know, I liked it because everybody wanted to hang out with me now. You know, and they were like, oh, hang out with, everyone calls me Mare. Hang out with Mare, you know, she can hang out with the best of them, or she may have what you want. And you know, so I was like fitting in and people were liking me, even though I was just numbing whatever pain. But now that I know I really wasn't numbing anything, I kind of just felt like my normal self when I would put something into my system. I never knew what I struggled from. I never knew what I suffered from till many years later when I finally met a woman and she explained what alcoholism was. And, you know, we'll get into that as I get there. But, yeah, consequences, you know, I'm not going to sit up here and tell you everything that happened to me, but there was a lot of boxes that were checked, a lot of, you know, black sheep boxes, things that my parents wouldn't have been proud of, things that, you know, tore me and my family apart. But meanwhile, my parents still knew, like, I grew up with good morals. So, like, this disease, alcoholism, it, like, I could have all the good morals in the world that were instilled in me. But if I have an alcoholic mind and alcoholic thinking, like, all those morals, they don't mean anything. So, excuse me. So, you know, everything got just perpetually worse. It just got worse. And I started, you know, my story, I'll just say that I'm a garbage can. And so it started with drinking and it ended with drinking, but there was tons of other things along the way. And everything just got worse and worse, and drinking was always there. Always there. Always there. And, you know, I see, like, I also, the woman, my first sponsor who taught me, she taught me that I had a soul sickness. And so what I suffered from really was what we call spiritual malady. So, like, my soul was so sick, and I was looking for all these external things over all those years to make me feel better. And I didn't know what I was out there and it was all these consequences. Everything was happening to me. I didn't know why I did anything. I just did it. I thought I had bad luck, but everything just kept getting worse. But that spiritual malady, that soul sickness that I suffered from, you know, and if I don't do all this work on a regular basis, it will creep back in again. I was looking for everything external to make the inside feel better. Everything. You name it. It started with food. I told you I was a chubby kid. That was my first addiction. External things, food. Then as I got older, it became drinking. Then as I got older, it became other things. Then it became men. Then it became shopping. The only thing that I've never had a problem with is gambling. That's because my grandfather, who I never met, dropped dead at the racetrack, and it scared the heck out of me. But so, like, for years and years, like, I have this soul sickness, and I always wanted more. I was just always restless. I didn't know what it was. I just knew that whatever I had, it was never enough, and I always wanted more. And so what happened was the consequences piled up. The drinking got worse and worse to where, you know, just the obsession was just 24 hours a day. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't care who I hurt. Sounds familiar, right? Because it's what we suffer from. I didn't care who I hurt. I didn't care what the consequences were. I just wanted more. And more was never enough. And so around 23 years old, after living homeless on a school bus out in California and traveling around thinking I was so cool, you know, with the Grateful Dead, I was so banged up and I was so spiritually sick that I called my parents and I said, I need help. I can't live anymore. And so it was like 10 years, just, you know, 10 strong, long, hard years. And so they, you know, my loving parents were like, come home and we'll get you into rehab and we'll get you the help you need. And I was like, thank you. Meanwhile, I was mortified, but I didn't want to live anymore. So there was no other options. I went to rehab. I got out and didn't realize anything about like this unmanageability. Like didn't think like I was powerless. Like totally just thought I ran with the wrong crowd and I got dealt a bad set of cards, a bad hand. And never surrendered. Never realized the powerlessness that I suffered from. Thought it was just because I was 23 and I started young and like, you know, I blamed it on everything like else, you know, like just a bunch of BS. But what happened was I was a dry drunk for about 6 years. And the only reason how I was able to do that was because I followed a guy around, AA. I mingled in AA. I read before the meeting how it works. So I thought I was like very spiritual because I read how it works before the meeting. And I thought like by osmosis, by those 6 years, I was just going to be, you know, just healed. I was going to have just a spiritual experience by hanging out and drinking your coffee and eating your cookies. I thought that's exactly what was going to happen because I didn't really think I had a problem. And after 6 years, I decided I got this. Like, I can drink wine. It's no big deal. And, you know, it took about like, I don't know, 6 months to a year. You know, because the disease was like fooling me into thinking like I really didn't have a problem because the alcoholic mind likes to tell us we don't really have a problem. But as soon as I drink one, I can't stop. And the obsession was wild and the allergy was ignited and I just wanted to drink more and more. And so I was off to the races at 29 years old and stayed out for about 9 years. And by the grace of God, I was able to come back in like 4.5 years ago when I was 38. Now those 9 years that I was out there, I was in complete denial that I was an alcoholic. Those years I thought because I had a car and I had an apartment and I was able to pay my bills and I was able to go to work, I was like, I'm not the bum down under the L with the trench coat and the brown bag. I am a woman that goes to work, pays her bills, and has good credit, so I'm not an alcoholic. And I fooled myself for so many years. But what was happening, so like I fooled myself. I had some external stuff, big deal. Big deal. I had external stuff. Who cares? Because inside, I was so, my soul was so sick, and all I wanted to do was drive my car off that one bend on the way home from work, so many times until I finally realized, like, I can't live anymore. And like our book says, like our literature says, I had two choices. I could go on to the bitter end, blotting out consciousness, or I could pick up spiritual tools. And I so wanted to end my life. And again, you know, I have a family, my parents and my sister, and now I have a nephew, and I'm surrounded by all this love. And all I want to do is die. So the little Mazda car and the apartment and the nice handbag and, you know, like the clothes that I wanted to wear, all that stuff didn't matter. None of it mattered because inside I was sick. I was sick. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I needed more. I needed more. And I didn't know what I suffered from. 38 years old, I checked myself into rehab. My family at the time was like, you're going to lose your job. They were like concerned, you know, they don't know. You're going to lose your job. Oh, my God. And I said point blank to my folks, I said, if I don't go to rehab, I'm going to die. There's going to be no daughter and there's going to be no job. So this is the only thing. I got to do this. And so I packed my bag. My dad dropped me off and I went to 30-day treatment. And, you know, I started to like my brain, you know, started to like defog. I started to feel better. And I knew now. See, I was so banged up now. like, I thought my bottom was when I was 23. But, like, the 9 years that I was out there and the depths of the insanity and hell that I came across was like my bottom had a trap door. And in that bottom was another bottom. And that bottom was so low, I never want to go back there. And I hope I never forget how bad it was, because I never want to live like that again. So I was one of those people that when they leave rehab, they say, you know, go to a meeting. I did everything. And guess what? I continue to do everything that's suggested and that our big book tells us to do, because it has saved my life. So I went to a meeting and they're like, you know, they say, is anybody new to AA? You know, raise your hand. And I wasn't new to AA, but I was so banged up and I never did Alcoholics Anonymous the way the program is outlined in the big book that I put my hand up, ego and pride aside, and I said, hi, I'm Meredith. I'm an alcoholic. I need help. Can some women help me, please? And thank God, one of my best friends I met that night, and she was there, and she latched on to me, and she called me every day and said, we're going to go here. Come with us. We're going to go here, come with us, you know. And so that's like a big thing for me that I always try to do at newcomers, is to make them feel comfortable and not just give them my number, but get their number. So because I want to call them and be like, hey, how you doing? Where are you going tonight? We're going to go here. Come meet us. Because if it wasn't for my friend Laura, like, I don't know where I would be today. She was so important in my recovery in the, like, throughout the whole time, but just like if she didn't do that, like I don't know if I would have showed up. Like, yeah, I was spiritually sick, but she made me feel comfortable, and that just made me want to keep coming back and going to where she was. So I got a sponsor, and thank God, I've had three sponsors in recovery, and the reason why is because I just, you know, it's like my recovery and my, which I kind of like shapeshift and I want to learn more, or I kind of outgrow, and it's all good. Like, all my sponsors were still very good friends. I talked to them all, actually. But the first one, she was like a drill sergeant. She was like, you call me every day. She was like, you come to my house once a week, I make you tea, we read the big book, and I was like, okay, like, whatever you say. And the reason why I liked this woman, and I picked her to be my sponsor, was because she had shared at a meeting, and she had shared pretty much, like, that she had all these major life things going on, and how by God's grace and spirituality and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, she was okay. So I thought to myself, if I had one of those problems that this poor woman, meanwhile she wasn't complaining, but this poor woman has, like, I couldn't even handle it. And she has like five of those huge problems. But the way that she handled herself and the way that she treated others was why I picked her to be my sponsor. And she took me through the big book. We read every sentence. She pointed out every single thing to me. And she took me through the 12 steps, and my experience was, I had definitely like the educational variety, because I didn't realize that I had a spiritual experience till after it happened. Like, I didn't have like this like Bill's story, like, you know, the wind blowing through his hair and this like huge white light moment that he talks about, and like, you know, how he found God. And I didn't realize like my experience had happened. In hindsight, I could see how like my perception started to change and how I would react and look at things differently, you know. But I think the biggest thing that was very powerful for me, and one of the things I always try to help hit home and help others with when I'm working with a woman, is that powerlessness. Like, I didn't realize what that meant. Like, I didn't realize that, like, once I, like, what I suffered from. So, like, alcoholism is, like, when I put the drink down and I don't have anything to relieve, to give me that ease and comfort, I'm left with me. And what's going on up here in this mind could be, like, crazy. So if you remove the booze from me and I don't have a solution, then, like, I'm going to go crazy. So if you take, so if I'm powerless, what's the opposite of powerless? Finding a power. So Nancy, my sponsor at the time, she explained to me that like I had to tap into something to help keep me sober. And that something was no human aid. And she helped guide me through spirituality, and she taught me like all different, you know, ways, and we read We Agnostic, and she just was like this very patient, loving, tolerant woman, and she took so much time with me, and I will forever be grateful. That powerlessness, you know, I have a mind that tells me I can drink, and the moment the booze hit my mouth and I taste it, I am just obsessed and just want to continue to drink it and drink it and drink it. And then the unmanageability factor of step one, I didn't realize that was like an internal thing. Like I thought, you know, like I never had kids, and I never had kids taken from me, and I never owned a house, so I never had a house taken from me. But like all those things, like you hear, you would think that like are the reasons, you know, why your life has become unmanageable. Like, I didn't have those. So that, in my mind, I didn't realize that the unmanageability is how I feel on the inside. And when she broke that down to me, I was like, wait a minute. My life is so unmanageable. I'm so depressed. I can't even pick my head up. Everything scares me. Life is unbearable. And so I think when I finally realized what it means to be an alcoholic and what it means to suffer from alcoholism, and she explained it to me, then I really understood what step one was. And, you know, and then to going through the steps with her, like step two, like all I had to do was believe in something. If I didn't know what it was, it's okay. I just had to, you know, come to believe. And, you know, my experience in this program is my higher power, who I choose to call God, my relationship with God has strengthened and has changed over the 4.5 years. What I believe in today has definitely has grown and has strengthened over the time and over the years. It's not exactly what it was on day one. But this is a program where we practice these principles and we have these spiritual disciplines and we do this work and we practice it. So, you know, when I'm trying to sit down with a new woman, you know, I always try to explain, like, you know, I was not like this 4.5 years ago at all. I was like anxious. I was a nervous wreck. I couldn't even speak properly. I resented everybody. Like this is just from practicing this over and over again. So then step three, like in my own words, my experience with step three is kind of like an agreement with God. Like, hey, God, like, if I go out and I help others and I do your bidding and I am maximum service to you, you will help keep me sober. And it also means in my own words, I will let you control things now. I will not obsess and get freaked out over every single tiny fear or big fear that there is to. I'm going to let you run the show. So what that means in my world on a day-to-day basis is when things aren't going my way, instead of getting all bent out of shape, I figure that there's a reason why God's having this come into my life. And, you know, through practice, I have come to believe that God, by God's grace, I can get through. Like, I know I can get through anything today. The experiences that I've had this past year and a half are definitely profound, that I know for sure this program of Alcoholics Anonymous works. And I know that God's grace is what keeps me sober, and I know that I can get through anything, just like my first sponsor taught me. And I'll get into that later. But, yeah, so I went through the steps as Nancy, and of course I did a thorough fourth step, and I've continued to do other fourth steps with other sponsors just to kind of get a different perspective and to kind of continually clean house. And I made my amends. I skipped over shortcomings, so like obviously there's tons of them. And obviously that's what creeps up and comes out in me today if I'm not spiritually fit. See, I've been blessed with the gift of neutrality. I don't think about drinking anymore. But if I'm not right, I'm going to get so feared up, and I'm going to be like, become jealous, and I'm going to become greedy, and I'm going to become slothful, and I'm going to become arrogant, and I'm going to become all these things that are not the best version of Meredith. And that's how I know, like, if I'm if I'm not on my square or I'm not spiritually fit, my character defects and my shortcomings, they come up and they rear their ugly head, and it's very uncomfortable. But again, you know, like, I've come to realize that those character defects and those shortcomings, I need them, because if I didn't have anything wrong with me, why would I try to become better? Why would I want to be, like, if those help me see that what I need to grow in or what I need to do, like, if I didn't have anything wrong with me, then, like, I wouldn't need to keep growing. So, I made my amends, I made my list, I made my amends, and that's where, pretty much after my ninth step, that's where the freedom came. Because I was able to show up and to tell somebody, hey, I was wrong. I did that to you, and that wasn't right. And because I did that to you, I want to make it right and go through everything. And my sponsors taught me, like, once you make an amends, you're not off the hook. You have to continue to be a good person towards these people. Like, living amends. Like, once I made the amends to my family and to couple ex-boyfriends and to an employer, and like the list goes on and on and on, I had to still show up if they were in my life as a decent human. I couldn't be like, hey, I was wrong, I did that to you, what else did I do that maybe I didn't say, and then go back to work and be a horrible employee. Like, those amends, you have to continue to be that person. And so those amends, I had a very good amends process. I personally didn't have anybody tell me to go take a hike or everybody's story's different, but mine was powerful and there was so much freedom in it because I showed those that I care for how I was wrong, recognized how I was wrong, what can I do to make it better? And, that there's so much freedom in that. And so 10, 11, and 12, as a lot of people say, they're maintenance steps, but in step 10, you know, like, I'll give you an example. Like, I go to work, okay? So, like, when I'm in work, things crop up. And I like when the book says, it doesn't say if they crop up, we do this. The book says when they crop up. Because the book's telling us, literally, that we're going to get resentful, and we're going to get angry, and we're going to get feared up, and we're going to get all these ways. So when these crop up, what do? And so we watch for them. We ask God to remove them. Then we resolutely turn and try to help somebody else. And that's step 10, what people would like to say, like your spot check inventory. I like to think of it as when somebody really irks me and does something that I don't really care for, and I'm resentful and angry at them, I better check myself. I broke myself. Sorry, I just looked at my friend. But, like, I really better take an internal look. Because this whole entire process, it's an internal rearrangement. I thought if I got everything on the outside, like, perfect, if I got that perfect job, and I finally met that perfect man, and I had that perfect car, and I had that perfect handbag, then I was going to feel great. But no, none of that makes me feel great. It's all an internal rearrangement. It's all the spiritual journey that, you know, this program has gifted me. Step 11 is at nighttime. And that's a thorough daily inventory. And so I share that with the girls that I sponsor, and the girls that I sponsor share theirs with me. It helps with accountability, because if I like to do it on my phone, because it's like this app, and it's very easy to just kind of like talk to text or write it in your phone, and you can share it with one another, because nowadays, with all the technology, it's pretty cool. But I could be like, oh, were you resentful today? I could be like, no, but knowing I have to show up for other women and get honest and try to clean house on a daily basis so I don't have like a huge burden of carrying around with me, I get pretty thorough. It's pretty powerful, actually. And I do that every night. And if I can't do it at night, I do it first thing in the morning. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening. As a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and to carry the message. That's what I try to do. I try to be a maximum service to others. I try to give back to AA and to the women around me and to my family and to my employer and to my boyfriend. I try to give back and be a maximum service to everybody. Because obviously I didn't touch on this, but you know, this is a disease where we're very self-centered. Of course, I was consumed with me for my whole entire life. it wasn't that, like, I thought self-centered and selfish meant, like, if I had a picnic lunch, I wasn't going to share it with you. Because I always thought, no, I'm so generous. Like, I don't understand. What do you mean I'm selfish? But really, it meant that, like, I was so consumed with self. Like, oh, poor me. Or, oh, do I look okay? Or, oh, what are they going to think of me? Or, did I say something wrong? Or so consumed with my alcoholism and just drinking and ripping and running and not caring about all the time and love that I saw for my family. Like, just all me, you know, all I, all self, all me, all the time. So the opposite thing of that is to be selfless and to help others. And I try to do that all the time, actually. I'm not always great at it, but I try to do it because it helps me get out of me. And it helps, I like to be there for someone, just like many women have been there for me over the time. So just to kind of paint a picture of what life looks like today for me, just to, you know, just to kind of paint a picture of what life looks like. So in the past 4.5 years, my biggest fears, I'll just start with this, my biggest fears on my first fourth step fear inventory was the loss of my parents, financial insecurity, job loss. Well, it all goes, I'm not good enough, because that's what all my fears go back to, and snakes, okay? Those are like my big ones, and like snakes, okay? So in the past 4 months, in January, I lost my mother, and last week, I just lost my father. And 2 days ago, my nephew just got a snake. I kid you not. My mom's probably completely out of her mind with this. But let me explain to you how Alcoholics Anonymous and God has done for me what I can't do for myself. My mother got diagnosed with cancer, and she did all the treatment. She was very sick. And I was able to show up for my mom, and I was able to help care for my mother with my father for the year and a half. If I was drinking, I wouldn't have done any of that. My family has always been there for me, so now as a sober woman, I was able to show up for her and my father. My parents were married for 53 years. My mother passed in January. And 4 months later, my father passed. That's a true love story. I was able to be there for my father. And here's the thing, like, yeah, I'm sad, but I'm not drinking over this. And I'm showing up. And I'm being a woman of dignity and grace. I'm still helping others. And I'm being a good employee. And I'm being a good girlfriend. And I'm being a good friend. And I'm being a great sister. And I'm being a great aunt. Why? Because by God's grace, I'm able to be that woman today. I wasn't able to deal with a hangnail 4.5 years ago. The littlest thing would have made me just lose it. And because this program has taught me about spirituality and has taught me, you know, to let go and let God and really just turn my will over on a daily basis, I'm okay. And, like, I can't stress enough to you how I used to not be okay. And I used to be a monster. That's what my parents would always call me, a monster. And I would be the daughter that would call or have a rehab or have a cop call the house late at night. And I was that kid. And I was able to show up for them. And that's a gift. Because you know why? This program helped me to have no unfinished business with my family. I made my amends. I was able to continually show up for my mom and my dad. And I was able for the past 4.5 years to show them who the daughter that they always wanted to have is. And that's a gift. So today, I'm not sad up here. I'm choked up because this program has given me the ability to be that woman. And I'm just forever grateful for AA. And thanks for letting me share.